Hello and welcome to the CISS podcast. This is the Point series by China Forum. In this series, we will have one-on-one discussions with top-level officials, diplomats, well-known entrepreneurs, academics, and media experts from both China and abroad to hear their fresh insights on important global issues.
Hello and welcome to the CISS podcast. I'm Dawei, Director of the Center for International Security and Strategy at Tsinghua University. In today's episode, we turn to the voices of two young leaders who stand at the forefront of the China-US exchanges, Ms. Huang Ying, a PhD student at the Department of International Relations at Tsinghua. She is also a pre-doctoral fellow at CISS and a former Secretary General of the CISS Youth Program. And Mr. Blake Kravitz, a current Yanqing scholar at Peking University and active participant in CISS Youth Dialogues. Together, they will reflect on their personal journeys into dialogue, their observation on how Chinese and American youth perceive each other, and how the young people from both sides can build bridges and contribute to the China-US exchanges. Please stay tuned. Ms. Huang Ying and Mr. Kravitz, welcome to CIS podcast. You know that maybe you are a listener to CIS podcast. So at least when I was a moderator, based on my experience, I always had some conversation and interviews with some famous scholar in China and in the US and in other countries, sometimes former diplomats, former government officials. But this is really our first time to have young students, next generation in our studio. So it's really my great pleasure to have you here. And I believe that our audience are really, you know, looking forward to our discussion today. So maybe how about say a few words, one or two sentences to briefly introduce yourself to our audience? Maybe start from Ying.
I'm Huang Ying. I am a PhD candidate at Tsinghua University, majoring in international relations. Hello, everyone.
And hi, everyone. My name is Blake Kravitz, with the 中文名字是 Kang Bai Ke. I'm currently a first-year student in Yanqing Academy of Peking University in the International Relations and Politics track. I completed my undergraduate studies just last semester at the University of Pennsylvania, where I had three majors: international relations, business, and East Asian languages and civilizations.
That's a lot. You got three bachelor degrees.
Two degrees, three majors.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Okay, it's really nice to have you here. So the reason we have you here is because both of you are very active in the China-US students to student, or we can say people to people educational exchanges. So I myself also work with both of you, both in China and in the United States on different events. We really admire what you have done. So that's the reason. So I'm quite curious, because you are relatively young, why you are so enthusiastic to this educational students exchanges. What makes you, you know, made the first step in this area? And is there any kind of driving force that pushing you forward in this regard? Let's start from Huang Ying, maybe.
Thank you. Thank you for your question. And honestly, I started the dialogue didn't because of some goals or tasks or some grand sense of mission. It's a long story. It backs to the summer of 2023. I went on a research trip with Professor Da. And with a group of brilliant Tsinghua undergraduate students. We spent 11 days across different cities in the United States. And we organized over 30 dialogues with experts from think tank, students from top university, and policymakers. And almost in every dialogue, we heard the same sentence, that no matter how tense U.S.-China relations are, the people should still be the friends. And the sentence really stuck with me. But I think there another moment is more important to push me to do these things. We are invited to a dinner by your friends, Professor Da's friends,
yes.
Who's I think maybe now in his 80s, right? His student and hand a trembling slide and raised his glass and spoke to us with warmth and sincerity. I was shocked at that moment, and I didn't catch every word at that moment, but the feeling was unmistakable, and I think he believed in the power of the connection deeply. Actually, I have always had an open opportunity before because I studied a foreign language when I was undergraduate.
Albanian?
Albanian language. Yeah, a small language. I also went abroad for my master's degree and I had a plan of cross-cultural experience. But before that night, before that dinner, most of my conversation with those people, with those international people, had a goal for school, for research, for tasks. But after that trip, that moment, something changed. I no longer wanted to talk to people because I had to do. I wanted to talk to them because I wanted to. I really wanted to meet that person again.
So you made friend, actually.
Yeah. So that's when I started to say the use dialogue, not as a project, not as a task, but as a way of living. So, and I think the best part and the most important reason is that I have a good team.
Yeah.
The friends that who we traveled with to the United States. And we all feel the same spark, the same inspiration. It was not about changing the world, changing the course of the United States and China relation. It's just about we wanted to do something meaningful together. That gave us the energy to keep going. So we did it. We started to push the dialogue, the U.S.-China youth dialogue.
Yeah, thank you, Huang Ying. I know that we spent good time together when we traveled in the United States, but I didn't know that was the starting point for your effort in these P2P exchanges. Actually, 2 months ago, I met my friend Woody Goldberg, who you mentioned, who gave the toast during the dinner. I met him again in Washington, D.C. So he still asked me, when will the students go back to the U.S.? He really want to meet you. And he asked me if next time when I have opportunity to lead a student's delegation, make sure to make Philadelphia as a stop. So I think this kind of, you know, people-to-people genuinely touching exchanges, I think have strong impact on both sides. So thank you very much. So Mr. Kravitz, can I call you Blake? Okay, Blake. What's your story? Do you have any story to share with us about the beginning of the experience?
Sure. So this is actually now my sixth time coming to China for an extended period of time. The first was in 2018 with the Middlebury Summer Language Academy, and it was in Beijing. I stayed at Capital Normal University for an intensive summer language program. Following summer, I lived with the host family in 2019 in Suzhou through a U.S. Department of State program called the National Security Language Initiative for Youth, where you live with a host family and take Chinese language classes. And then after these two experiences, this was 2018 and 2019, so then it was COVID, so I wasn't able to come back to China until several years later. My first time back then was in 2023. Actually, the first time back was with a course at Penn called the Wharton International Program. It was a group of students from Wharton who, many of them didn't have much formal background in China studies. It was more about learning about the business environment in China, but it was a wonderful course and a really nice opportunity to come back to China. And this was probably the first time when I came back in 2023 that I was, in my mind, I was like, I think this will be the sort of focus of my future academic or professional career. So in coming back in 2023, I sort of went about my daily life in China a little bit differently than I had in the past. I was more observant of small things. In between that time during COVID, I think what really inspired me to focus on U.S.-China policy as a future focus of my career was probably having studied in China before COVID and then seeing so many people in the U.S. form these misconceptions, but also just so many different views informed by U.S. media and other media sources about China that I was like, wow, I've actually been there. I can speak the language. Not great at the time, but I can speak enough that I have been and think I understand the country more than most people. And so I felt like there's sort of an opportunity for me to better inform people in the US about what China is really like. And then from that time with the Wharton International Program, which was only about a 10-day long program, that summer, I continued to stay in Beijing through Princeton in Beijing, another Chinese language program, which was actually at Beishida, at Beijing Normal University here in Beijing. And that was when the goal of that summer was to improve my Chinese language skills to a point where I can feel comfortable communicating with anyone. It was a hard program, but it was very worthwhile. Then after that, my fifth time in China was most recently this past spring through an exchange between Wharton and the Guanghua School of Management at PKU. Mm-hmm. So that was a semester exchange and my longest time in China since then. I was actually
How long was that?
I arrived in February and I left around right before July 4th.
Okay, 5 months.
Yeah. And that was my longest period of time in China. I was actually the only American student at the time in Guanghua. There were some other American general exchange students, but I was the only one in the business school. So I found that most of my peers were actually from European countries, and they would always come to me with questions about what was happening in American politics. So I found myself almost representing being a kind of de facto spokesperson for everything going on in the
U.S. I guess now you have more questions now.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you mentioned this experience. I think you have your Chinese study quite early, right? How old was you at that time?
Yeah, so I started in middle school in the sixth grade in the U.S. So I've now studied Chinese language for 12, almost 13 years. I'm 24 years old, so that's I recently realized that's half of my life.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is quite a long time.
Many of my American friends always told me that I think that's true, that in the U.S., not many young students are interested in studying foreign languages, particularly Chinese. I mean, comparing with 15 years ago, at that time, we had the 100K strong program at that time. So many young Americans studied Chinese, but now that is declining. So do you think that's true? And also why, you know, if that's true against this backdrop, why you still keep this interest in Chinese and keep on, studying it?
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. I'll start with why I started, because I think that's a little bit easier and it kind of explains the reason why I even think it's important and I switched to a private school in middle school and they offered Spanish, French, Latin, or Chinese. Mm-hmm. And actually at the time, I only chose Chinese because I think it was the most different of the options. Maybe with a little bit of encouragement from my father, but mostly just because I was like, wow, this school offers Chinese, which is pretty rare in the US. So it was almost just intellectual curiosity at the time. I think I may have taken the class more seriously in middle school than my other classmates. So I found, wow, I really like this. I think I'm pretty good at memorizing the characters. And then I kept going from there and just kept learning until now. But I think that is sort of a reflection on it, is I really think it's so important for people in the U.S. from a young age to have exposure to maybe not just Chinese language programs, but also Chinese culture programs. I think especially now, the programs that I did after in high school that really fostered my interest in China, Middlebury and then Nisley, they don't actually have, they stopped. Middlebury is back now just this year, but Nisley hasn't resumed programs in mainland China. And this is a U.S.-funded Chinese language program to come to mainland China and live with a host family and learn Chinese. So I think just having more opportunities for young middle schoolers and high school students in the U.S. to come to China, and even if it's just learning a language, but really just engaging with China as a country in person is so important to sort of building that kind of next generation of people interested in studying China. Mm-hmm.
Good. Thank you for sharing this story. Then let me move back to Huangying. I know that you organized, in past few years, many events, these exchanges. Is there a moment in your experience that you feel like truly moved you or changed your view, changed your perspective on these youth exchanges, young, next generation exchanges. Do you have particular one event that you feel very, you may say it's very successful? And maybe also to the contrary, do you have some bad experience that feel it's a kind of failure?
Because I have organized a lot of dialogues before, and firstly, I don't judge every event using the success or failure, the binary terms. I think dialogues is numbers game. One dialogue, one session will not change everything. But if there one dialogue can change something, I will surprised. There are moments in last year, in the spring term last year, in June, I think Professor Da also attended that event. I helped the CUSAF organize an event at the Tsinghua campus.
CUSAF is the foundation, China-US Exchanges Foundation.
Yes. I helped them organize the youth dialogue, and they invited some United States students, they called them the futures leader, to come to China and to visit the Tsinghua campus. And in that group, one student we have met before in the U.S. Trip, in the summer of the 2023. I feel there's, we call the yuanfen, the connections meant to be.
Yeah.
The moment, I also call the fifth moment, is very surprising. Maybe at that time, I think some connections more important than the dialogues itself. And when we meet each other in the second dialogue, I said, wow, amazing. He also said, wow, amazing. And I also called those team members in the United States trip to meet this guy. Mm-hmm. And we have a dinner together, and we talk about the change during the 1 year.
Yeah, actually, this is the question I really want to ask you. You know, you met so many young students from the U.S., from China. Do you really have someone, or how many of them will later become kind of friend, turn out to be your friend that you will maintain the contact after the event?
As for me, I think they're just like a numbers game. If I meet 10 person in one event, I will keep in touch with one or two.
So 10% of them may become kind of a long-term relationship.
Yes.
So then you made a lot of friends now.
Yes, I
think you are organized more than, I don't know, maybe 300, 400, I guess.
Maybe 30 events,
yeah. 30 dialogues. Yeah. 30 dialogues. So in each dialogue, you have maybe 2 dozen, 3 dozen students.
Yes, I think so.
So that's great.
Yeah, so I think it's successful with all kinds.
So all those are very good, good stories. But do you have any frustration organizing all this? Yeah, I'm particularly interested in this question.
I think there are two problems I face, two challenges, not problems, I think.
Yeah.
The first challenge is that I think many Chinese students are cared for. They, especially in their first
year,
care for about their language.
Okay.
I don't think they don't have the thoughts.
Yeah.
I think they have. But they always ask me, what if my English is not good? Well, if my point sounds too political or not too political, and I really get them.
Too political correct or maybe too political incorrect or something like
yes,
that.
Yes. I always encourage them to just express your opinions. Mm-hmm. You don't worry about that. You can represent China or the government.
Not
the
spokesperson, right?
Yeah,
so you don't need to think too much.
Yeah.
But Blake, now you said you are a spokesperson. Yeah, but please, yes.
And the second challenge, I think, is there are some difficult topics that we can have the dialogue with each other, especially those topics related to China-sensitive topic, political-sensitive topic. But I think, to be fair, those American domestic issues also be the difficult topics.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's about right or wrong. I think it's just about trust. Because before, they don't know each other.
Yeah.
If we don't know each other well, just jumping straightway into the political sensitive topic, everyone will think it's risky. So recently I think maybe we can change the system, change to the returning participants system. We can invite some participants who have ever participated in some dialogues before and join the dialogues again to meet the same person. So I think if we can build trust between us, we can deeper in the future. I think Professor Da have the same feeling in your work.
Yeah, I think I got your point. I think challenge comes from language capability, from culture, but actually it's not language. It's many Chinese students, maybe they are too shy. Maybe they believe that they're not very self-confident. And of course, there are also political concerns. So no matter it's on Chinese, on the issue related to China or issue related to the U.S., okay, thank you very much. So, Blake, as you said, you have four extended time. Is this the fourth time?
This is this is the fifth long period.
Yeah, so you spent multiple times, six times, and now you are a Yanqing scholar at PKU, Peking University. Do you have some moments in your experience that you really feel like a part of China? You can be part of this country. And is there any moment that you felt you clearly that you are an outsider, you are a foreigner? What makes you feel you are part of the country or not part of the country?
I was really glad you had this question on the paper beforehand and then are asking me this now, because I think it speaks to sort of an issue that a lot of foreigners who study here probably face. Is that, and I think it's also at the heart of a lot of concerns in the U.S. about having foreign students go to China. I mean, I obviously take U.S. security concerns seriously in coming here, and like whether U.S. students' loyalties could be compromised in coming. But I think one thing that all U.S. students probably have when they come here for an extended period of time is that regardless of how comfortable you may be living here or how good your Chinese can be, for example, I can speak Chinese at a native level and I can walk into a supermarket and try to order some fruit or something, and the person at the cash register will see me walk in without me speaking and just like stare at me blankly. I don't blame them. I mean, we look like, as a foreigner, you look different, and people don't always know how to react. So regardless of how much time you spend here or how good your language skills may get, it is difficult to sometimes not feel like a foreigner when you're in China. The more time I spend here and when I really feel like I'm part of China, like I appreciate Chinese culture and am forming relationships with my Chinese peers and students here. And it feels very normal. Like you have very normal relationships. You learn from them and we learn from each other and you get along quite well. But I think as a foreigner, you can appreciate Chinese culture and learn the language and come to learn about the country. And frankly, as someone who's been here now for six times, I think it actually made me feel even more American at one point. When I was in China last semester, I was like, the more time I spend here, I think I start to feel even more American. And that's not to say that like I don't love being here, because I do. I think you learn so much by just being in China and learning so much about how things in society work here. And it challenges you to think in so many new ways that you probably wouldn't have otherwise. But you do also, you feel like a foreigner at times. And it's a difficult sort of balance that...
I think this phenomenon also happened on the Chinese students who study in the United States. It's quite interesting that many Chinese students who study in the United States become, after several years, more patriotic. They feel they are Chinese. And when they were in China, they may think, China is not good in this regard. It's not good on that regard. But when they go abroad, I think Huang Yingspan also studied for, overseas. Then you become, your view on your own motherland has changed, right? Of course, there's still a lot of problem there, but you feel you are, like you feel you are Americans, and many Chinese, I think, have the similar way. So when we live in another country, we change a perspective to view our own country, then actually that strengthens your identity. And another point you mentioned, I think is quite interesting, is China very much different from, for example, the United States and many other countries. China does not have a lot of immigrants. So basically, it's dominating country of Chinese. So 99% of people looks just very similar. So there are people are not very experienced, you know. How, as you said, they don't know how to talk to you. They feel a little bit nervous. So then they stare at you. Yeah, I can understand that kind of feeling. But we don't have that when we live or study in the United States. People don't know if you are a citizen or not, right? So if you are naturalized immigrant or you are a visitor. So it's easier for others to become part of the U.S., but I think it's more difficult for foreigners to become really, you know, part of China.
I would clarify and also say that even though that some Chinese may stare at you or be confused that, like, you look different, it's not at all malign. It's very much, like, curiosity and very friendly. Like, I think last spring, for example, my parents came to visit China when I was studying here. And it was their first time here. And my mom, now she tells all of her friends at home, she always says everyone was so friendly. Uh-huh. Like I think her main takeaway from her time was like, wow, like every single person we saw was like, hello, welcome to China. Like they didn't know that I spoke Chinese, but they saw me with my parents walking and would just be so like, they would come up to us and want us to feel welcome here. So even though there is a bit of hesitation because we may look different, very much, it's not at all like ill will, and it's it's very welcoming.
Totally agree with you.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we talked a lot about this youth exchanges, youth dialogue. Both of you believe that what you are doing, or you know, organizing those dialogues and the events, do you think this effort can have a long-term impact on the two countries' relationship and on your peer? Do you think this kind of activity, this kind of effort can shape their view to the, you know, to the other country?
You mean the meaning of the youth?
Yes, yes. Is that really useful or it's just for fun?
I think it's useful because I did it.
Yeah, you believe it's useful, right?
Yeah, I believe it. And I can never doubt the use of the dialogue. But because I think we are all the ordinary people, we are the small people, we are small individuals living through a very large in history. So maybe this youth dialogue cannot change the course of U.S.-China relation, but I think those dialogues can change someone, can change one individual, like me, change me and change my...
That already make the world different.
Yeah. And I think if more and more people like me can feel the change, they can... maybe in the future, they can change the world. So I don't think use or use dialogues can change everything, but I think use like me can choose how we show up in the world.
Yeah, Blake, I have a question about the perception and the misperception. You lived here, you study here. What is the most outstanding misperception among Chinese about the United States? You encounter so many Chinese, they have their own view on the U.S. So some are correct, some are wrong. So what is the most common and outstanding noticeable misperception?
Yeah, you get a lot of small ones. Like, for example, just driving in like a taxi in Beijing, the taxi driver will ask if everyone in the U.S. has a gun or...
shooting at each other.
Yeah. there's a lot of little things like that, but I think... And I'll stay in the taxi driver sort of realm because I think that one thing that I've probably learned from my experience studying in China has also been repeated to me by several different taxi drivers is that regardless of sort of high level tensions between our two countries, I think everyone in the US, just like in China, what people tend to really care about is sort of their own lives getting better. And like, if my like economic well-being is improving, and there's a lot of things, the political sphere in the US that are said about China, and similarly, vice versa. I think people in the US and China, and I've learned this through dialogue as well with students, just what people really tend to care about and find areas of to agree upon is that we both care about our own lives improving. No one wants conflict. Everyone just wants to live a little bit better of a life. And if your government is providing that to you, then people tend to be happy. And I think that mm-hmm. is not just true in China, but it's also true in the US.
Yeah.
Then Huang Ying, among the Americans that you encountered, what kind of misperception about China you feel that is very, very is noticeable?
I think Americans' peers think the China is so small. I mean, the small, it's so small. The small is very interesting. They think China culture is limited to Hanfu, Shufa, Chunjie. Actually, China, Gongfu, Confuzi. Actually, we, including me, always told them that there are a lot of Chinese culture they can experience. In last dialogue, we have tried to lead them to experience the delivery, like the Meituan and the Kuaidi in China. Lead them to experience this way of living. They think it's amazing. So I think this American piece said that China's speed is faster than their expectations.
Yeah, but of course, China's delivery is really, really fast. And you can get something 1 hour later, right? Or you sometimes within 1 hour.
Yeah,
from the other corner of the city.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, great. So thank you. Thank you. I think we're approaching the end of this episode. I will invite you to say maybe one sentence or a few words to your peer, to your young students about the China-US relations, something that you want to tell, you really want them to think about or you know or want them to know. Do you have anything to say from Blake?
Yeah, I think this is one thing that has lasted me with me now since actually when I was here in June. And had the opportunity to be a student fellow when the Penn Project had some meetings around Beijing. And I had the chance to participate in some of the meetings and just really listen in. And I think one of my takeaways, not just from our meetings with Chinese government agencies, but also with some people from the US side as well, was that people tend to agree now, I think, that despite what I would call like structural disagreements between the US and China and despite differences that may not be so easy to resolve in such a short period of time, that the US and China do have to find a way to coexist. And I think both people in the US are coming around to that and people in China agree that's the case as well. And so I encourage more students in the US just to, I mean, obviously, I would say to come to China and experience it in person and learn about the country, but also, maybe more importantly, just like listen to each other, your Chinese peers, listen to them with respect and openness, and to just really try to engage with China and the Chinese people in a more honest and comprehensive way.
Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you. Thank you for this advice. So, Ying?
Yeah, first I want to say I agree with your opinion, listen to each other. I think those dialogues, whenever I participated or I organized, I think those dialogues changed my mindset. Before, I always focused on what I want to say. I had points and I wanted to make them. But now my goal is changed to that I let me help them to understand me, even accept what I'm trying to say. So this one, I agree with you, listen to each other. And I want to share to everyone, also talk to myself, be open to the dialogue, be brave to change, be curious to the future, and become the international voices to be ready to step onto the global stage in the future.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you both. Not only for taking time joining this episode of CISS podcast, but for your effort to bring Chinese and American students, and of course also students from other countries together, let them talk, let them listen to each other and let them understand each other. Thank you very much. Please go on. And I look forward to working with you in this semester and in the coming semesters. Thank you very much. That was Huang Ying and Blake Kravitz sharing their candidate reflects on why youth dialogues matter, how cross-cultural encounters can reshape perceptions, and what it means to sustain conversations even amid growing challenges in the US-China relations. Thank you for listening, and please stay tuned for the more of the CISS podcast.